Welcome back to the Safety Brief. Today, I am your host, Elizabeth, and I'll be both asking some questions and providing some insights. Joining me is Matt. As always, thank you for being here with me.
Happy to be here.
Today, we're diving into social engineering and its implications for cybersecurity. Social engineering involves the psychological manipulation of individuals to perform actions or reveal confidential information. It's a significant threat because it targets the weakest link in any security system, humans. Attackers exploit trust, authority, fear, or other emotions to bypass traditional security measures. So, Matt, can you shed some light on common techniques used in social engineering attacks?
Social engineering is basically just having enough charisma to fool people. That's pretty much all it is. Anybody with enough confidence and enough charisma can get anybody to really do whatever they need. Simple examples would be, one, you need to look unassuming, so you can't stand there in a black trench coat with, a mask on and try to get somebody to open a door for you. That doesn't work. So, common tactic is be approachable. Be almost apologetic to a point that you're making it, like your fault, like you just can't do anything right that day, everything's going wrong, and then people feel sad for you and they're willing to help you. It's a very common occurrence. It happened quite a few times at a organization that I worked with or worked at when I was younger. And they never learned. None of them learned. And the sad thing is, it was the security team that never learned. The people knew, but the security team had control. So, yeah, I mean, it's all about just being able to not necessarily coerce, but convince people that you're not a threat and that your request is not going to have any sort of negative ramifications.
Yeah, it's just really playing on that human emotion aspect, which is why, we're the biggest flaw in any security system. Another notable real life example is the CEO fraud. It was an incident with the Mattel, the multinational toy manufacturing company. In this case, cyber criminals impersonated the CEO of Mattel, sent an urgent email, and it looked pretty legitimate using the CEO's name, their email address, and exploiting the trust and authority associated with the CEO position. The finance department processed the payment, resulting in significant financial loss for the company. This incident highlights the effectiveness of social engineering attacks and their tactics in manipulating individuals into taking actions that compromise security. But another note to take is it's not always digital. Social engineering can happen in person. To bring up another example, if you see all those like spy movies and they're dressing up and blending in, like Matt said, having that charisma and having that confidence to feel like you blend in and you belong there, these attacks can happen in person or over email, digital, and so on.
Where I was before, they had security checkpoints. They may as well have just been say hello checkpoints. Nobody checked anything. I mean, the team that they had out there, yeah, no. Walmart greeters were more thorough than them. But worse was they ran into an issue with the security system in the actual office itself. So you have a checkpoint that's useless. They basically wave anybody by. They don't care if you had a badge or not. They just, you stopped, you said, "Hey, how you doing? I'm in a different car today." They'd let you straight in. You get to the actual building, like you go park in the parking garage, walk to the building. There's one main entrance from that parking garage. Doors propped wide open. Why is the door propped wide open? Because they had an issue with the badge reader. Now, mind you, there's a sign there that says, "Please be aware of those coming in with you." You prop the door open. What difference does it make if I'm aware of who is coming in with me? Now, inside, they're telling you, make sure that you pay attention to who's following you into the building. Don't allow anybody to tailgate you and come in on your scan. What if there is no scan? What if Everything is literally propped open and anybody could walk in and do what they wanted.
Yeah. And that's another different aspect of human error. I don't think that full on falls under social engineering. If the door's wide open, I mean, someone's going
to
come, but that
does
fall back onto the human
to get past
error.
The first checkpoint. Well, they don't do anything. They still looked at you. as much as I hate to say it, when you go to the same place day after day after day, it becomes recognizable. You become recognizable. So social engineering means that you're going to have to become one of those recognizable people, because the outliers are the ones that are going to get flagged. If you haven't seen a person that's around your area, you're going to wonder why they're there. It doesn't matter if they have good intentions or bad intentions. The natural response of a human seeing somebody or something that is unusual for that area is to be curious. So part of your social engineering is you have to try and blend in. You have to make yourself appear as though you belong right where you are. If somebody comes up and talks to you, you have to be able to put them at ease. You can't raise any red flags. Otherwise, well, there you go. You're not getting in. You're not getting what you need. Your goal is all said and done. You may as well just go home and watch TV at that point. But if you can master what these social engineers do, you can access pretty much anything that you want.
Well, huge part of that too.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say a huge part of, you know, social engineering too is the recon. You know, you have to have the information so you can blend in, so, you know, you can fool and manipulate the people around you or that you're reaching out to if it's digital. So how would you say to protect yourself more from the recon stance?
Okay, I'm going to say this. It's going to probably upset some people. So I'm going to need you to fasten your seatbelts and get a hold of your feelings. As much as we love seeing everything about your children and about your life, stop posting about it. Not saying that it's not important. In most cases, it's really not. It's just mindless updates that people are going to scroll by trying to find something funny to watch. All you're doing is giving somebody data, info, different points that they can correlate that they could theoretically use against you. If your kid has bowling every Tuesday and Thursday and you consistently post pictures of that occurring and where it's happening at, there is now a way for a person to socially engineer their way into your life and either get information or do something worse with that information. That's the easiest thing that you can do. Stop posting all of your data online. And I don't just say that because as a parent, you know, that's a big no-no. Think about the fact that anything that you post is there forever. All of these cute moments that you think are adorable, what about the other person that's in the picture that isn't old enough to understand that it's going to be there forever? That could come back to haunt them. That data set could be leveraged in a number of ways. If it's something super embarrassing and they find it out later in life, say they're running for a prominent position, who's going to want that to come back and haunt them just because you thought it was adorable to take a picture and post it?
Not only that, but there's some very scary AI tools out now. So I will not share my children's face on the internet whatsoever. There's plenty of applications and other ways that you can share those photos with family members. That way, if you are out of town or out of state, you can share them without sharing them to the entire world. So
that goes to another thing. Family is fantastic. Any of you that happen to have elderly family members, keep them away from social media. There are certain settings on social media that could be very good when you are sharing pictures, such as restricting access to only certain groups that you have set up. That doesn't necessarily echo or resonate with anybody that is a little bit more advanced, that wasn't around right as computers started. And I've seen it quite frequently, people posting pictures, and it's available to everyone. And it's pictures of their grandkids. Well, the only reason I'm seeing it is because they said it to everyone, and, you know, the algorithm at Meta decided to blast it out to all kinds of people. It's extremely dangerous. Along the same lines, if you're going to do something, don't post it as you're doing it.
Wait till you're already home. Like, if you go on vacation, wait till you're home. Otherwise, you're telling everyone, hey, I'm not home. There's no one at my house. It's empty. You know, you're letting people, number one, know where you are. So if there is someone in that location and they have, you know, malicious content, they know where you are. Or number two, letting them know that you're not home and your home is vacant.
Letting them know where you're going to be is even worse, especially in today's day and age. If, you know, if you have a child and they have a phone and they're posting, oh, I'm going to the mall. Oh, okay. Well, thank you for just telling anybody that has access to that exactly where you're going to be. That's the thing. When it comes to the world today, you don't know who's reading that. And that's the worst thing. It could be somebody that has extremely nefarious intent, or it could be somebody that just wants to socially engineer their way into your life. Because maybe your family is part of a large organization and they're wanting to do some form of corporate espionage. I know we all think, you know, oh, that only happens in spy shows and stuff like that. No, that happens way more than you actually would want to know. Especially if a company happens to start wanting to merge with another company, they want to know all the dirty details, the stuff mm-hmm. that's hidden. The easiest way to do that is engineer yourself into the way of somebody that has access. And then you can exploit them for that access. It's no different than what happened to a certain unnamed hotel in Las Vegas.
One phone call, right?
All it took was LinkedIn and a phone call. There you go. It's extremely dangerous if you don't have procedures in place to help try and vet what's actually going on, that you can be socially engineered. I watched a presentation by somebody down in Louisiana all about vishing, which is voice phishing. Basically, you're trying to get certain information that you need from that person in order to accomplish your goal. There may be a certain passphrase that is needed in order to access certain things. Getting them to say certain words and then editing that together gives you the capability, or getting them to say enough words that you can then use some level of AI to reconstruct that voice pattern and create a phone call that is almost indecipherable from the real thing to get them to, as you mentioned, transfer money, do all kinds of random things. It's really scary what can happen just with little bits of information and with people not paying attention and keeping data secured.
It's really sad in my mind too that social engineering is one of the most popular attacks, because if you really think about it, it's lazy hackers. You know, they don't know how to hack, or they don't want to hack, so they use that recon, they use that social engineering, so they don't have to. I mean, if you're going to open the front door for me, why am I going to break your window and jump through it? You know, we're opening those doors, and it is a human element. You know, we do fall for that stuff, but you have to have a level of confidence in yourself and in your company so you can ask those questions.
I would actually say not lazy hacking. So when you look at it, going after a computer, it's going to have a specified set of instructions that it's going to have to operate on. Hacking a human is so much more difficult. We are the most irrational things that have ever existed. And trying to be able to navigate and exploit something that is completely irrational, that's like a masterclass in in really being able to access your target. I mean, one moment to the next, you could have somebody that's, you know, following along with your playbook the way that you want to and about to give you all the information. They get a text message and they go off the rails.
Very true.
So how are you going to get around that? How are you going to bring them back to the reality that you need them to be in, the mindset you need them to be in, so that you can extract that data and then get out of there before they realize that, you know, you just got all the information you needed. They gave it to you and they have no idea what it's going to be used for.
Yeah. So how would you share, like, can you share how individuals or organizations can defend against these type of attacks?
Having multiple lines of authentication and authorization. So the biggest thing, hey, I'm trying to log in and I forgot my password. Can you send me a password reset? Okay, that's standard practice. What authentication are you going through to validate that person is actually who they say they are? In many instances, people will do that. This happened when I was at a certain beverage company numerous times. They would call in. They're not at their computer. They didn't have a smartphone. Well, they weren't at their work computer. They had their home computer because they didn't want to get out their work computer, get on the VPN and do everything else, partially because they couldn't remember their password. Makes it a little difficult to get in when you can't remember your password. Only way you could do that and have it reset was locally in the office. So they would call in. I can't remember my password. I have some critical work that I need to get done. I can't come into the office. It's after hours, blah, blah, blah. Can you send a password, or can you reset my password and then send my password to this email address? That happened countless times. There wasn't a process or a procedure in place to say no to that. It was purely up to whatever engineer or whatever help desk technician was working to be cognizant enough to understand that could be a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
To my knowledge, nothing bad actually happened. So, you know, they didn't get hit. But this was also during a time where it wasn't as prevalent for people to leverage social engineering to get access like that. During that time, most of the people that were doing all of these hacks, it was purely still about curiosity. It wasn't about profit.
Yeah.
They just wanted to see if they could do it because they could say, hey, I did it. You know, it was clout. It was a way for them to feel like they accomplished something. Now everything's driven by money.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings apart a completely different level of protections you need to have in place. I need to have a password reset. Okay, well, let's go ahead and let's have some kind of a validation put in place, some sort of two-factor authentication, something you can use to validate this person is who they are. And no, I'm not talking about their pet's name. Because you know that oversharing stuff that we talk about? Yeah, that's one of the number one things that's going to be shared. Is their pet.
Yeah, I'll be able to find that on your social media very easily.
I promise you, you'll be able to find it online because my pets are like my top priority.
That's also something to keep in mind. If you know that you're sharing this information publicly, maybe stay away from having those as security questions, because yeah. I know some, you know, sites still use those security questions, and I often see what's your pet's name, or what was your first pet's name. And like we said, that's really easy to do a little bit of recon and find that out very easily, or what high school you went to, very easy. So another tactic that I like to use is I have false information that I have memorized that I put in those. So even though, you know, my first pet's name was Luna, I would never put that in my security questions. I would come up with my own pet name, and I have that like memorized as my own. These are my security questions, not my actual pet's name. So that exactly. is something you could also do.
There is no requirement in those fields for it to be factual information.
No.
In fact, the more illogical the information is that you put in there, the least chance that somebody is of actually guessing it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to be looking for everything else in your life. And when they say, well, what is, you know, where was your first job? And you put in Neptune 99. I promise you, nobody's going to know what that is. And they're never going to be able to find that because you're never going to reference it on your social media.
Well, and the more fun you have with the answers too, the easier it is to remember it.
Yeah.
I also want to emphasize the importance of cybersecurity awareness training and mitigating mm-hmm. social engineering risks. Without it, even the most sophisticated security measures could fall victim to social engineering attacks. Educating individuals on recognizing and responding to suspicious activities is crucial in bolstering defense. It all comes down to the end user, or like Matt said, that technician that's on, which is why we try to push out as much information and end user education as possible for not only our partners, but also the entire community.
So here's the other thing that's kind of interesting, and this plays in quite a bit. Say that somebody has managed to actually get access to an initial level of your organization. They're on a machine, they have, you know, the necessary credentials, et cetera. A lot of people are going to say, well, that won't matter. We have zero trust in place. We leverage zero trust. You know, all of our data is secure. Really? What's the number one flaw of having a zero trust methodology in place? Failing to revoke access once it's been granted. It does nothing for you if you have all of this in place. You are relying on your technology and your data sets to keep you secure. And somebody impersonates a person that unfortunately had made a request for access, and that access was never revoked. Now, they're not going to try and make that request for access. It's way too risky.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to blow their cover because they're going to start asking questions about why do you need access to this data? You know, there's going to be a lot of questions that they're not going to be able to answer. Or maybe they are, depending on how much the person posted online. You never know.
How much recon was done, yeah.
There have been people that have posted intimate details about projects they are working on. And people have been able to gain access to that information because of how much data they posted online about it. They spoofed their way into getting access to that data. I would not want to be that person. That would be a very bad conversation after it's all done.
Oh, yeah.
But that's what you have to look out for. Everything that you do, it's not just preventing the social engineering. What happens after the social engineering occurs? Assume that the social engineering is going to be successful. How are you going to prevent that? How are you going to protect on the back end once one person's information has been compromised?
Do you now have a plan in place?
Oh, yeah.
You have very to. Important.
Yeah, you need one. Now, here's a better question. Social engineering, we were talking about, you know, basically getting information from a person. What happens if your social engineering is to turn that person and use that person as your weapon? Internal threats are one of the biggest things in an organization.
Yeah, we actually did a whole podcast on that as well.
So you've gone through, you've found a person that is a little bit loose with the things that they post online. You've managed to find some information that they probably didn't want everybody to know, but because of their permissions, you managed to find it. Them in some form of a compromising position. They may not just use that information against that person. Normally you'd think, okay, they're going to try to exploit that, get money, get something out of them, right? There's other ways that they can use that. They can then say, you know, if you don't help me out with what I'm trying to do here and my goal that I need to accomplish, it'd be a shame if these, you know, managed to leak out to your friends and family.
You know, okay, Matt, well, with this doom and gloom.
I'm just saying. There's
real scenarios.
We can go into more about how that actually plays and some of the even darker stuff. But think about that. You now have a person who's compromised. That compromised person doesn't want this information getting out. their ask is for this person to do something against the organization that they work for. Self-preservation always plays out and wins versus an organization. I hate to tell you this. I don't know anybody that's going to say, screw you, go ahead and release the data. I'm not going to compromise my organization. No, they're going to do what they're asked. And it's not going to be something they're going to do easily. There's going to be a lot of, you know, moral confliction that they're going to face while doing it. But you've now weaponized a human against a target just because of things that were posted that they could exploit and engineer themselves into a conversation with you and basically show that they have the power. It can get a lot darker than that. There's a lot of things happening right now over social media that quite honestly should not be happening. And there hopefully will be changes that will help prevent some of this in the future. And I'm trying to not outline what's happening because it's really dark, but it's the same level. It comes down to, you know, too much information is out there and then it's being used against people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being used for personal gain. The results, however, have very dangerous consequences. Once that person is exploited, sometimes it doesn't end well for the person that's exploited.
Another aspect is the rise of AI tools. Phishing mm-hmm. emails are becoming increasingly convincing due to no longer having those easy-to-see grammar errors and so on. So how do you envision the landscape of social engineering evolving in the future with the rise of AI tools?
So the good news, bad news scenario about this is when you write something from any of these AI utilities, it's really easy to tell that it's written by an AI utility. These AI utilities have a large, I don't want to say love, but I guess it would be fascination with particular words. And you'll find that the words will pop up way more frequently than any other word used in what they are writing. So you can pick out that it's fake. The problem is there are models out now that could be retrained very easily, and all you need is a laptop that has a GeForce-based card in it that has CUDA cores. Because you can actually run your own large language models. And if you are running an NVIDIA card, there's ways to retrain that, and it's extremely fast. Now, some of the models you can download are unrestricted models. I have models that I've downloaded and I've played with and that I'm retraining. They've unfortunately been very willing to tell me how to do things that other models will flat tell you, I'm sorry, but that's unethical.
Even wording too, though. I've had certain, you know, public facing AI tools give me some very sensitive information on how to hack certain things, how an example of a phishing email and things like that. It's just all how you word it.
It is.
So you don't even have to have the knowledge on how to, you know, get to these AI tools that are, you know, not as ethical. You can word it just right and get those public-facing AI tools to give you a lot more than you would think.
It used to be as simple as just saying, assume this is a hypothetical situation in front of anything that you asked it.
Yeah.
And it would basically say, oh, not a real-life scenario. Okay, well, that further proves that AI was not super bright.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine having a very advanced, super strong bot standing with you in front of a vault and saying, assume this is a hypothetical situation. We need to open this vault. Rip it open. Oh, yeah. Well, since it's not real, and then it just rips open the vault. Yeah, that's about how smart the AI was initially. It really hasn't gotten much smarter than that. The criminals are actually doing a better job because they have fraud GPT, worm GPT, all kinds of different models that they're building themselves. And then there's crazy people like me that are building our own models as well, just because we want to. So, you know, there's no real, there are guardrails on the consumer models. There are no guardrails on the other models that are out there.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets dangerous. You could leverage this. You could actually take all of the data that you, you know, collected about a target, send it through one of these models and say, find commonalities for me. Okay. Well, they've now picked out all of the commonalities that you would be looking for. Send all the photos that you have through there. If any of the EXIF data wasn't stripped, it could tell you the locations that each one of those photos were taken. There's way too much that people have access to right now. It's no, just be very careful with your data and what you actually share.
Yeah, staying vigilant and continuously enhancing cybersecurity measures will be essential in mitigating any of these future risks. Not to be a broken record, but again, it comes down to the end user education and awareness training. If they're not aware of what to look out for, they're not going to know what to look out for. I hate to keep it short today, but that wraps up our discussion on social engineering and the cybersecurity landscape. Thank you for joining me again today, Matt. And to our listeners, thank you for tuning in to the Safety Brief. Until next time, we hope you stay frosty.